Welcome to Honduras, specifically Roatan, Honduras, a little island off the coast of Honduras. I am here on a cruise ship stop, the water is about as cold as I would ever prefer to step into an ocean. I have not stepped into colder oceans. Our cruise was rerouted at the last minute to get away from Hurricane Melissa. So instead of going to the Eastern Caribbean, we went to the Western Caribbean. But it's a charming little, this is fantastic. I'm glad we're here. It's really cute. Little beach cabanas and swings in the sand. This is one of those 360 camera videos, so you can grab hold of it and twist it around to different areas. Eve happens to be directly on the other side of me filming a makeup video on her iPhone, which is kind of funny. So let's go through your top voted questions from PollGab. The top voted question from Dopinder asks, what is your opinion of the GitHub Copilot support in Management Studio 2022? I love it. I love that Microsoft was forward thinking enough to say, look, we shipped something with a Copilot that wasn't as good and wasn't as long term as it should have been. Because I think GitHub Copilot is really, out of all Microsoft's Copilots, is the most promising one for those of us who are near developers. So I have respect for Microsoft for walking back SSMS 21 and saying, nope, hold on, we're going to throw that work away and we're going to start over with GitHub Copilot. That takes guts. They made the right decision early on quickly. As to the quality of what the product is, it's so early, I don't really care. It's clearly not great. Like every experience that I've had with it, it's made one mistake after another. It hasn't used the context of the database appropriately, but that's okay. I feel like as long as they standardized on GitHub Copilot, it's a better foundation to build upon. Now, the jury is still out as to whether or not Copilots in general will make profitable financial sense in the longer term. There've been a couple of analysts recently who've looked at the amount of revenue that would take for LLMs to actually be profitable, given the amount of money that they're spending. And right now, GitHub Copilot is so cheap for you to use, there is no way in heaven or hell that Microsoft is making money on that. So clearly they're trying to figure out how to run it in a more profitable way quickly enough as people start to use it that they don't lose too much. You know, that they may have to change pricing, they may have to change the product, the number of requests that you get, whatever. But those are all fine-tuning things. At least they've got the right... I say fine-tuning things. It may never work right. The product may never work right. It may never be offerable in a profitable way. Who the hell knows? But in terms of right now, at least I think they made the right decision by choosing to focus on GitHub Copilot rather than the janky initial setup, which involved setting up your own Azure OpenAI account, which just wasn't going to scale. I did it. I just don't think a lot of people are going to go forward with that. Next up, Running Out of Arguments says, my company is planning an application that processes incoming emails, and they want to store the emails and the attachments in SQL Server. You used to argue against that, meaning me, and suggest using the file system instead. Has your opinion changed? Anytime you want to ask someone, has your opinion changed? What you probably want to ask instead is, what has changed about the outgoing or the external environment around this thing that might have changed your opinion? Otherwise, you keep tapping your parents on the shoulder in the back of the car going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Hey, are we there yet? I need to pee. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And you can see how annoying that would be. So I'll turn around and ask you, what do you think has gotten better about storing large unstructured data and text and files? Because remember, emails can have file attachments inside the database. What do you think about that has changed that would influence my opinion? And then go from there. But if you can't find anything that's changed, then that's probably your answer. Are we there yet? No, son. No, son, we are not. You should have peed before we left the house. I warned you about that. Now you're going to have to wet your pants, like everyone else who stores files in the database. This analogy works really well. Next question. Harold says, when SQL Server takes up a lot of memory and it gets busy, why doesn't it go back down even though the application traffic is brought down? Great question. It all comes down to the fact that SQL Server uses memory to cache data. It assumes that you've asked for that data before and you're probably going to ask for it again. Maybe not in 10 seconds, maybe not in 10 minutes, maybe not even in 10 hours. But when you do ask for it again, it would be really cool if that data was already cached up in memory instead of having to wait to go back to disk, your slow, crappy disk, in order to read it again. That's why SQL Server's memory does not go back down. Whatever memory you want to give to SQL Server, let it keep it. Don't try to micromanage that. It uses that effectively for caching data. Next up, Mr. SQL Seek says, what was the rough employee count of the smallest company that has hired you in the past 5 years? He says, I am curious if you're hired mostly by large organizations or if smaller orgs, even startups, bring you in for assistance. I'm going to give you the extreme example. When Stack Overflow was just starting up, I think it was still just Jeff Atwood, Jeff Dalgas, and dang it, what was the dude's name who coded Dapper? Oh my God, I cannot believe I don't remember this guy's name. Oh my gosh. But it was like three people when I first worked with Stack Overflow. But it was because I pinged Jeff. Jeff was on Twitter one day and he was talking about execution plans. And I was like, please let me help you. You know, y'all have done so much cool stuff for the community. I would love to help you. And I ended up working with them for quite a while until long after they'd gotten VC funding. I do work with small startups from time to time. The thing I would say, though, is generally, small startups don't tend to use database software that costs $2,000 per CPU core. They tend, not always, but they tend to use stuff that's free. So the few times when I get involved in a really small company, it's usually because it either spun out of a much bigger company or it's an executive who said, all right, I've got a lot of experience with SQL Server. I'm going to go start a brand new company to solve this one business problem. And I'm going to use SQL Server because it helps me get to market faster because it's a platform that I already know well. But that's very much the exception rather than the norm. Most of the time when companies hire me, they have dozens to hundreds of employees. It tends not to be thousands of employees because usually when companies have thousands of employees, they want to hire other companies that also have large infrastructures. They want to hire giant consulting companies that have pools of consultants who can jump in at any given time to help them on their projects. I have worked for ginormous companies, but it's the exception, just like me being hired by like 2 to 3 people, firms is an exception. Next up, Scooter says, when passing an array data type to a T-SQL store procedure, what are your pros and cons of passing the array as a string value, a table variable, or a user-defined table type? This stored procedure will be called by C#. So SQL Server sucks really bad at string processing. When I say sucks really bad, I don't mean that it can't do it. It absolutely can, but it's CPU intensive. And then SQL Server has to figure out how many rows are involved in that object, what the contents of those rows look like. So it doesn't usually make sense to pass it as a parameter. If you're going to pass a table into SQL Server stored procedures, create a temp table. Create a temp table, populate it with the stuff that you want, and then call the stored procedure, and the stored proc should assume that that temp table already exists. Then that way you can use the statistics on that temp table. Now, that is the 60-second answer. for the full-blown answer, which is much more nuanced for things like lists of values, check out my Fundamentals of TempDB class. I don't think I have a module on that in Mastering Query Tuning. I think it's really just in Fundamentals of TempDB. Next up, Big Blue Couch says, hey Brent, my T-SQL skills are mid-level at best. I identify with that. I don't know a lot of people who think that they have top-notch T-SQL skills, because the reality is the more you learn about T-SQL, the more you compare yourself to Itzhak Ben-Gad, who's like the original wizard of T-SQL. When I stand in the same proximity as Itzhak Ben-Gad and I watch him do his thing, I'm like, man, I suck at T-SQL. So you're not alone. There are a lot of us who consider ourselves mid-level. He says, in recent months, I finished reading T-SQL Fundamentals, which is one of Itzhak's books, and T-SQL Windowing Functions. Do you have recommendations of blogs to read that go into more advanced T-SQL usage? No. So there was a time when advanced T-SQL was a topic that got discussed on things like SQL Server Magazine. These days, advanced T-SQL, I don't know that it really makes sense to specialize in advanced T-SQL as much as what's the problem that you need to solve and then go from there. And when you say what's a problem I need to solve, like what can't you do with T-SQL? What do your bosses come to you and say, here, I need this objective accomplished, and you can't figure out how to do it with T-SQL. Maybe you're not proud of the way that you do it. That's okay. If you can get across the finish line, I'm kind of okay with that. If you find yourself hitting walls where you go, I cannot do the thing with T-SQL, I think that that's different. And I think the place I would honestly start with is either Claude or ChatGPT. Describe the problem and give it the sample input tables and say, I can't figure out how to do this with T-SQL, and I want to do it in a set-based way, like I don't want to do it in a cursor way, and see what it comes up with. That'll probably help teach you on an example-by-example basis instead of just going out and randomly learning oddball T-SQL. Otherwise, if you want to learn oddball T-SQL, get the next book by Itzhak Ben-Gad. So you hit Fundamentals. The next book is T-SQL Querying. And the other blog that I would read is Brad Schulz. And I want to say it's S-C-H-U-L-Z. Brad has not published a blog post in probably 10 years, maybe 20 even, kind of like Itzhak. Itzhak's retired, not writing anymore. But both of those will give you great examples of stuff you may never run into. For example, like Itzhak has blogged about the gaps and islands problem. I've never in my career ever been told, you have to solve the gaps and islands problem. I find it interesting, sure, but it's just not something that I need to fix in order to get paid. But between Itzhak's T-SQL querying book and Brad Schulz's old blog post, if I didn't spell that correctly, somebody in the comments will probably put the link to Brad's old Blogspot blog. But Google for Brad Schulz T-SQL Poker. And he had a blog post that walked you through playing poker with T-SQL that was just enchanting. He did all kinds of really cool tricks. Next up, Chris says, I can physically leave my workplace. However, how do I mentally disengage from work so that I can be present with my loved ones? I find disengaging being very difficult when I'm neck deep in a difficult problem. How do you close out a work mode when you've had so many open loops? One of the best pieces of advice I ever saw was leave when the next step is immediately obvious. At the end of the day, don't clean up all your emails. Don't feel like you got to finish up every piece of work. Leave when you go, I know exactly what I need to try next. It may not need to work, or it may not actually work, but I know what I need to try next. Write that down on your whiteboard, email it to yourself, whatever. And at that point, walk away and go to a beach in Roatan and the off the coast of Honduras. But that way, you can be at peace because you go, I don't need to worry. When I come back to work, I know exactly what I'm going to do next. Otherwise, if you try to leave when you either have the thing finished or when you're stumped, then it's going to drive you crazy all night. Because if you're finished, you're going to think, okay, what's the next thing that I have to do? I have all this stuff on my plate. If you leave when you're stumped, you're going to be like bothered by it all night. But if you leave when the next step is immediately obvious, it's much easier to disengage. I know who I heard that from. It was Adam Savage of Mythbusters. He had such a great example of, you know, like how you leave your work area at the end of the day. If you're building a long, complex model or a project for a client, that you walk away from it when you go, all right, here's exactly, when I come back, I'm going to have to polish the shields on this point right here. Then I'm going to have to figure out all kinds of things about how the shields fit into the rest of the starship. But for now, at least, I know exactly what I have to do next. And then he's able to walk home and just go, okay, when I come back home or come back to work tomorrow, I know exactly what I have to do. I find that so helpful. I actually have two whiteboards in my home office for that exact purpose. I have one that's more of a long-term whiteboard, stuff that I need to keep in mind long-term for planning. And then I have another one where I go, where I'm in the middle of something at the end of the day, I'll go, okay, here are the things that are next on my list, and let's go do that when I come back in. And it makes transition so much easier. Next up, AI is my DBA says, I'm setting up SQL servers with 6 local SSDs. I need to balance RAID level, drive separation. I'm leaning towards, here, look, you're overthinking it. It's a really easy answer. With modern SSDs, you have a pair and a RAID 1 for the OS, and the rest is one big pool that can either be RAID 5 or RAID 10. There are going to be people who passionately argue about that in the comments. I don't really give a rip. But one big array. Do not micromanage for like data logs and tempdb, because all you're doing is carving up a big pool of storage into smaller pools of capacity and smaller pools of performance. This comes up all the time when I talk to cloud engineers about how they're going to configure SQL Server, and they think, well, don't I need dedicated throughput for the data drives? Don't I need dedicated throughput for logs? Don't I need dedicated throughput for tempdb? Think about that for a second. When you're accessing the log files, what are you doing? Most likely you're doing inserts, updates, and deletes, and you need to harden that to the transaction log as quickly as possible. Are you writing to the data files at that same time? No, you are not. People think that they are, but checkpoints are only done asynchronously behind the scenes about every 60 seconds. You're going to incur drive writes to the data file then, but why would you slow down the log file and go, I only want these two, they're dedicated just to the log file. Yeah, they're not going to be very fast because it's only 2 SSDs, but they'll be guaranteed. They'll be guaranteed when nothing else is going on the server. Similarly, When you're reading from the data files, what else is going on? Are you writing to the log files? Probably not. You're running queries that need to do big, ugly data file scans, big, ugly selects, and you want as much throughput on those selects as you can get. Why would you carve that throughput up into smaller amounts? It just doesn't make sense. And even if you thought you should, what's the right number? Well, it's just not easy for us to know that. So as a result, just keep it simple, stupid. And I say that to myself, not just you. Keep it simple, stupid, and use just one big array. When you get to the point where you have dozens of drives and a mature application, then it starts to become different. You can start to allocate specific pools of drives, but with 6 drives, who cares? My tea got cold says, how fearful should I be of hinting indexes? I think I've done it to get across the finish line maybe 3 times, if that. What you want to do instead is hint the cardinality that would suggest to SQL Server that index is the most efficient. And I teach you how to do that in my Mastering Parameter Sniffing class. And then finally, we have QEnt says, hello, Brent. Do you think Oracle invests more in its certified professionals than Microsoft does? The new certifications feel quite shallow, both in prestige and in technical debt. Technical depth. I don't know anything about Oracle certifications. What I will say is that Microsoft certifications are managed by the marketing team, not really by the product group. A long time ago, 15 years or so ago, they were managed by the product group. But now certifications are really used for two things. One is to make money for Microsoft. Two is to program certified professionals to sell the things that Microsoft wants them to sell. So as a result, the Azure certifications are all about using Azure and about getting you to parrot the things that Microsoft marketing wants you to say to your managers. I think we should use Azure's SQL DB with Elastic Pools to solve this problem. And they're really just teaching you all their different expensive golden hammers, trying to get you to use those golden hammers to solve that particular problem. So I am of the personal opinion that Microsoft technical certifications are junk. They're just absolute garbage used as marketing exercises. And I feel so sorry for A, companies who use those certs to filter their applicants, and B, applicants who think that they're learning something valuable as part of spending their time and money. It's just disgusting. It's shameful. I think that people who work for Microsoft marketing in those kinds of job roles should feel disgusted with themselves. They should feel embarrassed at their work. They should be looking for other careers as quickly as they can, because they are selling out innocent technical professionals and stopping them from having fulfilling careers by studying things that will matter to the job work that they actually need to be doing, as opposed to memorizing marketing bullshit for products that they aren't really responsible for selling. Can you tell how I feel about that one? That one, sometimes it's hard to tell. Sometimes I play my cards kind of close to my vest. But the Microsoft marketing people involved with certifications are heartless assholes. That's about the end of that one. It's not like I'm drunk either. This is literally my first glass of champagne for the day. It's 11:52. I did have one other drink when we came out here, but it was just literally one drink and it was really small. I aim to go fix that problem now, because it's about 11:52 a.m. I know that our food is going to be delivered at noon. I know that Eve just finished her makeup video right behind me, her makeup tutorial. So now it's time for us to go enjoy ourselves. You would think, too, that I'm doing this as part of like a tax write-off, that I would write off part of this vacation because I'm filming videos on it. I don't do that. I don't do any part of that. Like, this is not work billable. I don't know. I can understand why people do that kind of thing, but it, I'm waving at her. She's not seeing me because her, oh, she did see me. Okay. But I'm not that kind of person. This is something that I love taking y'all along with me as I go in different places, and using these kinds of times to have fun with our education and with sharing knowledge on SQL Server. Feel it changing, sharing my opinions on Microsoft marketing. For all I know, Oracle certifications could be the same way. Oracle certifications could be garbage too. I don't know that. I'm not saying Oracle's better. This is also, it's also part of the challenge with dealing with a for-profit product, because I understand that Microsoft can't lose money as part of building certifications. So I feel them there, but I don't know what the right answer is. And no, I will never be building a certification product. So thanks for hanging out with me. I will see y'all in the next office hours. Adios.